With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Grimling.
And I'm one of the Dylan Parhams, Gary. Which one? Or one NFL player with the last name Parham. Who am I?
Oh my God. So we're slightly spoiling. I mean, you really need to know this team's roster very deep to know this, but my mind has been blown in our pre-show conversation when I realized there is Dylan Parham, who was a third-round pick of the Raiders. Now, the Raiders, of course, were on the last show, so we're not going to be talking about the Raiders on this show. That's not the depth chart I was looking at. But I opened up another team's depth chart, and I was like, Dylan Parham? No, he's on the Raiders. And no, he's not a tight end. He was like a tight end as a freshman at Memphis. And no, there are two Dylan Parhams coming into the league in 2022. And I don't know. All I can really do is make high-pitched squealing noises in response to this. My brain has been completely fried.
There's Dylan. There's multiple Dylan Parhams, so that would make them Dylan Par High. And then there's a Donald Parham.
Yes. I mean, we're not even getting into Donald Parham just yet. Having two Parhams in the league is fairly exceptional, but two Dylan Parhams. That's insane. How did this happen?
It's an absolutely gigantic day for the Parham family crest. And
yeah.
I'm really happy for everyone involved there.
Holy cow. All right. Well, let's get to it, because the second Dylan Parham's team is actually going to be the first team we get to in this show. That might be a hint for some of you, but let me count down 32 through 13 in our...
Before you do that,
yeah.
How many people... You said that's a hint for people. I would love to know how many people are like, oh, I know exactly where we're going with this. If, you know, I would love to know.
If either Dylan Parham is listening to the show, they know what team is 12th place now.
Yes.
Before we get to it. Before
yes.
We get to it in 20 seconds.
Mm.
All right. This, by the way, we should point out for anyone listening to the first time, this is our preseason power rankings countdown. This is a combined power ranking between me and Connor. We averaged out our rankings and came up with this. We're counting down 32 to 1. let me count down 32 to 13, as I said I would do. 32nd was the Falcons, 31st the Bears, 30th Seattle, 29th was the Texans. Tied for 27th, we had the Giants and the Jaguars, 26th was the Jets, 25th the Panthers, 24th the Washington Commanders, 23rd is the Vikings, 21st was a tie between the Dolphins and Steelers, 20th was the Browns, 19th the Lions, 18th Cardinals, tie for 16th between the Titans and the Saints, 15th the Patriots, tied for 13th we had the Eagles and the Raiders. In 12th place in our countdown is the Denver Broncos, home of the other Dylan Barham, or maybe just the first Dylan Barham, if you're like a member of his family. But
yeah,
he was undrafted, whereas Dylan Barham, the offensive lineman for the Raiders, was drafted. So yes, it's a little bit of a disrespect to call him the other Dylan Barham, but I think it is warranted. I think it's justified to an extent.
He's the only drafted Parham, because Donald was also undrafted out of Stetson.
Okay. Okay, there you go. So right now, Raiders Dylan Parham is sort of the king of the Parhams in the NFL.
Yeah.
Unless you count NFL production.
Yeah, the Denver Broncos, Gary, checking in at 12. This is a good time to be a Denver Broncos fan.
So, Connor, let me ask you, besides having the other Dylan Parham, what is the deal with the Broncos?
In any other circumstance, I would say the biggest deal with this team is that they acquired Russell Wilson via trade this offseason and got a new head coach. But they also got bought by the guy who is like, they got bought by Walmart.
Yeah.
So Walmart bought them. Lewis Hamilton, the very cool Formula One driver. That's who that is, right? Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
I know about race car stuff. Lewis Hamilton. Do you watch the Netflix documentary Formula One Drive to Survive?
No.
I watched it I was running on a treadmill once, and they show the cars and they're turning on these tracks, and I almost fell off because my body just accidentally started kind of moving with the car. But everything with Lewis Hamilton seemed very cool. They got bought by the Walmart guy, which is great. And if you think about it, if we're in this arms race now where the Bengals literally had to sell the naming rights to their stadium in order to get cash and equity for a Joe Burrow contract at some point, it's great to have Walmart as your owner, where they could just be like, yeah, we'll just fully guarantee everybody's contracts. We don't care. It really doesn't matter. Yeah. So that's great. But what else is the deal with this team? They traded for Russell Wilson in the offseason, and they fired Vic Fangio, and they hired Nathaniel Hackett, Packers offensive coordinator, and our 2021 SI preseason assistant coach of the year. So very exciting times here in Denver.
I do want to talk about Russell Wilson, but I think before we jump into that, I do want to talk about the defense really briefly, at least. New defensive coordinator. Obviously, Vic Fangio is no longer here. They didn't keep him on as some kind of intern. Ahiro Evero, Rams assistant, comes in. Obviously, a former Brandon Staley assistant. I guess, loosely say he's kind of part of that Vic Fangio tree in a way as well. But I don't know. This group, we're kind of just projecting no real fall off for the defense. I don't know if that's, do we feel good about that? It's still a really good secondary.
It's a really good secondary. I think that they knew going into this offseason that they had to upgrade at pass rusher with limited draft capital. And as we talked about, Gary, a couple times, it's a great pass rushing class, but it was not a great pass rushing free agent class. And so you end up overpaying for Randy Gregory and probably expecting to use him more in an every down role than Gregory's ever been used in his career. And so I we'll see how that goes, but you would assume that they're still going to be a really difficult secondary to contend with. And schematically, like we said, there's not really going to be a drop off there, because Evero has sort of studied at the altar of this defense and has been a part of it for a very long time in his career.
Okay. So let's jump into the offense a little bit, and I'll just put it out here. There's been some conversation about, you know, who's the worst quarterback in the AFC West. I think there's a very legitimate argument to be made that right now, we're not talking about career accomplishments. We're not looking at 5 years ago. Right now, I'd feel better about Derek Carr than Russell Wilson, based in large part on two things. Number one, yes, Russell Wilson dealt with some injuries last year. He was not sharp when he came back in any way, shape, or form. Maybe he rushed back. Maybe he'll be out there early in the year and will be 100% healthy, and none of this will really matter in the end. But if you go back two seasons ago, the Let Russ Cook season, where everyone was really excited because they were finally just going to take the reins off and they were going to throw the ball 40 times every week, and that's the way the Seahawks were going to play. And then the wheels sort of came off of that pretty quickly. I shouldn't say pretty quickly, but by mid-season, everyone saw that this was not going to be a team that leaned super heavily on the run game. They adjusted accordingly, the Rams especially, in one of their matchups, and things just didn't work out. You still do want some sort of balanced offense here for Russell Wilson. You want to be able to, and that's probably what Nathaniel Hackett wants to do anyway, but I don't know. I mean, he's obviously better than Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke. This is clearly an upgrade, undoubtedly. I mean, that's not really a conversation we're having, but is there a chance we're looking at essentially the fourth best quarterback in a really good division and a team that maybe just comes up a little bit short because of that?
So when you were saying that you might rather have Derek Carr, I'm going through like week four of this weird virus that my kids brought home from daycare, and so I can't do my falsetto or my Ric Flair woo, but I was gonna woo, and then I kind of just made like a weird animal sound instead, and then I tried to message producer Shelby to see if he could put the air horns sound effects on right when you were saying that. Mm-hmm. But then I've been accused of typing during this show, and so I don't want to type. And so it was just a really, it was a tough moment for me during that monologue. But
you made the same sound that I made when I realized there was a second Dylan Parham.
My take on Russell Wilson is that he will be better than Derek Carr because he's playing in an offense that ties itself exclusively to the performance of the running game, and they're going to have a damn good running game this year. They might have one of the five best running games in the NFL, would you say?
Yeah.
That offensive line is superb. I mean, the way that Garrett Bowles has come around during his career, you have Dalton Risner at guard. You have the mountain man, Quinn Meinerz, at the other guard spot. Billy Turner at the other tackle spot. Billy Turner, obviously from that Packers system, knows how to run that offense. And then Javonte Williams, from what we were able to see last year, the preview of that, I think they're going to run the ball down people's throats. And if you tie boot action to that, I think it's going to be really hard to stop. And Russell is great coming off of boot action. Mm-hmm. He's more comfortable on the move. He doesn't even have to do the Russell Wilson things, right? He's going to be, he doesn't have to spin backwards and kind of, do all those weird Madden glitch things just to find an open wide receiver. He's just going to, be calm, collected. He's going to have space and an opportunity to get the ball down the field. So I think he's going to have a better season than Derek Carr just by virtue of the fact that the offense around him is better structurally, the whole thing.
Yeah. I felt it's funny because my favorite Russell Wilson offense was that year. I want to say it was 2015. It might have been 16. One year in the second half of the season, they just switched to quick strike passing game. It was all quick game, and it was awesome. They came up short. I think that was the year after they had lost the Malcolm Butler game and, came up short in the playoffs, lost a game in Carolina to the Cam Newton sort of juggernaut Panthers, and that's the way it went. But Russell Wilson is over the course of his career, he's been near unstoppable when he can get late into the down, and things open up even more. And I mean, gosh, it, you know, on paper, it looks like it all should go pretty well, and we'll see if it does.
Yeah. I agree. So I'm doing my predicting all 272 games, and the AFC West was impossible. And I don't think it's the version, my version that comes out is going to be incredibly unpopular for several reasons. But does this team win 11 games? Do they win 9? I don't know. I don't know what their sort of window is at this point. But we'll get to that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Who moves you emotionally among the players on this roster?
I'm going to take, an obvious friend of the podcast. We'll call him Albert O. But Albert Okwuegbunam. How did I do on that?
I think you did good. Really well. Yeah.
See, you lose Noah Fant. Albert O, not known as sort of your knockdown, drag-out blocker. But this is the guy that interests me the most because what you need, and they have, they drafted a tight end in the third round to the Broncos. So, it might be a player that's better kind of custom suited to this offense. But Nathaniel Hackett in Green Bay, he needed Mercedes Lewis. That was the instrumental piece of what made that offense run, was a secondary tight end that was just going to be an ass-kicking blocker and was going to set the table for everything that they did offensively. There's a lot of these little things in this offense that coaches need for it to function properly. And so I don't know if Fant was ever going to be that guy. I'm sure you wouldn't put him in the trade if he was that essential to your offense. But who is going to come in and replace the talent? And are you going to get enough of a receiving threat, but more importantly, a movable blocking piece to make this offense work the way that you need it to work?
I am going to go, I'm going to have one, and then I'm going to have a quick honorable mention here, but I'm going with Garrett Bowles, left tackle, who obviously, slow start to his career, very penalty prone early on, and he proved that he could overcome that, and he's become much less penalty prone, maybe not as good in 2021 as he was in 2020, but he was still good in 2021, he was great in 2020. The thing I wonder about with a team that has not blocked for Russell Wilson in the past and now will be blocking for Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson improvises a lot. He moves around. It's tough to know where he is when your back is to him. And if you are a guy like Garrett Bowles, who's a little bit penalty prone, do you end up getting into a lot of situations where you panic a little bit and you start getting grabby? I think there is a challenge to blocking for Russell Wilson, and I think I'm not going to sit here and say like the Seahawks secretly had the 2017 Dallas Cowboys offensive line, but it is difficult to block for him. Like I don't know how else to really put it, and it'll really be I think it's like the seventh time I've said interesting in this segment, but it'll be interesting to see how this front five reacts, but especially Bowles, I've got an eye on especially. The other guy, just real quick on the defense side of the ball, clearly their weakness on this team is the linebacking core. They lost Jonas Griffith. He'll miss probably at least the first month of the season. He was competing to start. It's going to be Josie Jewell, and it's going to be sort of TBA at the other linebacker spot. Jewell is just really interesting because he's a really good run defender, very instinctive player against the run, and he's a liability against the pass. So we'll see how it goes. Obviously, they have really good safety play. That can make up for a little bit of your shortcomings in the linebacking core, but that's the soft spot in this defense. I mean, that's if it goes wrong, it's going to go wrong because it went wrong there.
Gary, not only taking a shot at Josie Jewell, but also Pro Football Focus that had Jewell is one of their highest graded coverage linebackers
really?
Last year. Yeah. Huh. I mean, he only played how many snaps? Week one, he played like 60 snaps, and then week two he played 21 snaps.
That means they were either taking him off the field or they had very rudimentary assignments for him. I don't think there's any doubt. Like I don't even think this is like a take. He's not a great mover. He's not a great mover in coverage. He's a really good run defender. He's a good player. He's just not a really good pass defender. So yeah, I don't know.
Josie Jewell, he got drafted. That was that silly, was it the pandemic year that he got drafted in 2018. And he got drafted by a man jumping off of, like, a shirtless man on like a fake cliff above a pool. And then the guy was just like, Josie Jewell. And then he did like a front flip into the water.
Man.
So that was a good moment for him.
Nice. Good for him.
Yeah. Iowa guy. Good stuff.
All right. What are the expectations here? What's the best case scenario for the Broncos?
I'm looking at my predicting all 272 games. I'll give this one away. I have them at 11-6. Which is good enough for third place in the division. I mean,
it's
that
wild.
To me is, I mean, is this possible, or are we totally overblowing one of the teams in this division?
I am overblowing one of the teams in this division that we'll get to later in this series. But look, I think the Broncos are the third best team. I think they might be able to catch. We'll get to the Chiefs when we get to the Chiefs. I think there is a scenario where the Chiefs do slide back more than people expect, but I think it's clear that the Broncos and the Raiders are battling for third place going into the year. Injuries happen, and we'll see how the year plays out. But yeah, I mean, again, this is going to be, we're in the portion of the series where everyone's a Super Bowl contender. Everyone should have Super Bowl aspirations. But, you know, this is a team in a really deep conference, in a really deep division inside that conference. And I don't know. Yeah, third place. I think that's believable right there.
Do they? I remember that you had, you hate defenses that have just started playing together. It's one of your least favorite things.
Yes.
Does a team with a new quarterback sort of fit into that same vibe for you, or does Matt Stafford winning a Super Bowl in his first year with the Rams sort of poo-poo that concept?
No, so my thing with Stafford was I do think it clicked faster than could have been expected, but you even saw mid-season after they lost Robert Woods and they were trying to work in Odell Beckham and everyone panicked and, you know, the Rams were going to lose their last eight games. You can see it. You can see it played out that way. And again, Russell Wilson is a guy who does a lot of off-schedule stuff. He sort of deliberately goes off-schedule sometimes. I think there is an adjustment period. That said, it's just so much talent. Not only Russell Wilson, but obviously even after the Tim Patrick injury. I mean, Cortland Sutton, I think, is a legitimate number one. He's got to stay healthy. Jerry Jeudy is probably ready for a breakout. Our friend Albert O, he's going to be good. And then, Javonte Williams is in the Marshawn Lynch mold. I don't necessarily want to compare every physical, violent running back to Marshawn Lynch, but that's Javonte Williams. They have everything there. Yeah, it should click sooner rather than later. And even if it doesn't quite click, you can still kind of figure it out.
Yeah, and you're right. There is a Javonte Williams led the league last year in broken tackles, by the way. 17.2%. Broken and missed tackle force percentage,
yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yep.
While we were saying this, I was doing a little research on the fly. I was actually going to look up most career broken tackles by a running back, but I was on StatMuse, and instead it gave me most career tackles by a running back, which is a really fascinating group of people. If you could guess, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If you can get anybody in the top If you can get anybody in the top 20, I'll give you, I'll mail you a, what do we have here?
One of your football cards.
Chobani Complete Advanced Nutrition Yogurt Smoothie.
Okay.
From ShopRite.
Will that stay okay in the mail?
I mean, that's not my responsibility, so I'm getting it there.
Do I have to eat it? It'll either be a prize or a punishment, depending on how this goes.
Yeah.
Okay, so is this all time or is this active?
All time.
All time, okay. This is the only sort of hint, and it's less a hint and it's more a clarification. Does it look like special teams tackles are included?
It does look like special teams tackles are included.
Okay.
And the number one player on this list is named after an inanimate object.
I will guess Kevin Faulk.
How is Kevin Faulk an inanimate object? Are you just guessing Kevin
Just
Faulk?
Guessing. No, I was going to guess Kevin Faulk before you said that. So now I'm just guessing Kevin Faulk is in the top, what'd we say, 7? 20?
He's not. I'll just run down the top of this list, by the way. Rock Cartwright, number one.
Yep.
Number two, Adrian Peterson. When did he get so many tackles?
That's really weird. Wait, is it Vikings Adrian Peterson or is it Bears Adrian Peterson? Can you tell?
It is. Oh, it's Bears Adrian
Peterson.
Gotta
be Bears Adrian Peterson, yeah.
Ah, I was like... Did he make a tackle in every Vikings interception ever?
He'd have to.
How the hell did that happen? Rock Cartwright, Bears Adrian Peterson, Fred McAfee, Montel Owens, Cedric Pierman, Anthony Sherman, Michael Robinson, Terry Jackson, Ruben Drones.
Okay, all right.
So it's a good list. A lot of Tywan Jones, Mike Tolbert, Brandon Bolden.
Oh, Tywan Jones was a good one. I should have guessed that.
Yeah, consummate punt gunner.
Yeah. Yep.
He's still in the NFL.
Yes. I was going to say, Anthony Sherman seemed like the closest to active guy in the list thus far, but Tywan Jones was a good one. I feel no shame about my Kevin Faulk guess, but no. Tywan Jones is really good.
It's totally fine. But yeah, you're right. Every time we see a running back that breaks a tackle now, we're all like, Marshawn Lynch. I think Javonte Williams, in a lot of ways, is a different... and perhaps a more modernized and efficient version of that. And I'm not saying he's going to turn out to be better than Marshawn Lynch, who's a Hall of Fame player, but I think he might fit this offense better. I don't know how well Marshawn Lynch would have done an outside zone, like pure outside zone.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's
but
fair.
But Javonte Williams, I think, is going to fare very, very well in this offense.
Okay.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't Nick?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Let's move on to, we have no ties in this show. So this is just alone in 11th place. We have the Indianapolis Colts. Connor, what's the deal with the Colts?
Wow, we have Indianapolis high.
I was going to say we have Indianapolis low, but you go ahead.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they made the absolute steal of the offseason, waited until the Falcons did the dumbest thing, which was to get into the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes and then not even have the fortitude to close the deal. After you alienated the franchise quarterback that brought you to the Super Bowl and made you relevant for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Matt Ryan's still got some good football left in him. You know, he takes care of himself. It's not like the mental processing has slowed in any way. That team just got really bad and really old around him. They got him for next to nothing. They're pairing him with a really good play caller and good check down artist, Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
And so you have John Taylor there. I think there's going to be I think it's going to be spicy this year offensively. That's the deal with this team.
Yeah, you know, Connor, I really agree with you about Matt Ryan, and I think you can question whether Matt Ryan's arm is, you know, it's not prime Matt Ryan arm, but it's still a good enough arm, especially if you're playing your home games indoors. If they have to go outdoors, if they have to go to Buffalo in January, maybe this comes up as an issue, but you know, it's enough, and it also just gives them a level of competence that they didn't have late last year in Carson Wentz, and that is probably why Carson Wentz is not there anymore. But the other thing I want to highlight real quickly is this defense, and I don't think it's a huge departure going from Matt Eberflus to Gus Bradley. You have the same basic principles here. I will say, I mean, look, Gus Bradley's defense in Vegas, and it's funny because we were wondering when they hired him, it was like, oh, they hired the old Seahawks guy with his single high looks. Like, this will never work in 2021. He was ahead of the curve, or, I don't know, I guess leading the curve, if you consider this a curve. They blitz never.
Yeah.
He just doesn't blitz. They were by far, I'm looking at the blitz rate numbers right now, according
to
our provider.
They're like 12%, right?
12.8%, yeah. Which is last in the league. The next closest to them is the Eagles at 17.2, and then everyone else is over 20%. So they are just going to play that four-man pass rush, and that's kind of what the Colts did under Matt Eberflus, though Eberflus was pretty good at causing some chaos up front with maybe a group that wasn't overly talented. On the front.
I think they all figured this out, though. I mean, I think a lot of teams have realized, and this is something that defensive coaches have been talking about for years, but just I don't know if it was a lack of courage in putting it together or fear that you would somehow teams would use it to punish you in the running game. But if you stunt with four guys, you're going to be able to occupy more than four blockers just by virtue of doing that. And I think that okay, so you'll at least be able to do it like 80% of the time. And I think that's what all these coaches figured out. It's like, oh, I can take up this entire offensive line with three or four guys. and all we got to do is just keep running a bunch of crazy plays. Our defensive linemen are athletic anyway. Why not do it? Mm-hmm. And Matt Eberflus was telling me about, he's like, you know, I got this stuff from Rod Marinelli, who used to do it all the time back in the day. Nothing is new, right? It's all cyclical. But this is something where Gus Bradley, you can keep the same coverage concepts, and then you can look back up the tape last year. You can look at old Rod Marinelli tape. You know that the guys are there. They already know how to run these stunts. Most of the defensive linemen are still there. You know, I don't see a huge drop, even though you would have wanted to keep Matt Eberflus if you could, because he is brilliant and he's all going to be on the cutting edge of whatever is next instead of just what is now. And so,
yes,
but maybe Gus Bradley is that guy too. I mean, you have to give him a ton of credit for what he was able to do last year and brought in your boy. I mean, this is a Yannick Ngakoue team. This is a Gary Gramling team.
That's all you need to know. I didn't know if it was like too on the nose to pick him as the guy who moves me emotionally on this roster. Just always available. Reunites here with Gus Bradley, and you know, everyone rightly recognized Max Crosby's excellent play last year, but it was Ngakoue who was going up against the best offensive tackle on the other team most of the time. It was, you know, he had the tougher assignments in Vegas last year, and now they get, you know, they get a very available dirty work guy who forces a lot of fumbles.
You love Yannick Ngakoue.
I love Yannick Ngakoue. I will also mention Kwity Paye real quick, because they do kind of need him to step up on the other side of this line if this is going to work. And, you know, first round pedigree, you would expect he has a chance to do that.
I think they'll be able to make it work. Who moves me emotionally on this team, Gary? I would say Quentin Nelson, which is obvious. However, watch out for brewing contract discussions there. That is going to be wild. Because I think that is, and it's just like a little sort of insidey baseball kind of thing that I'm sure a lot of people don't really care about. But if you're building the core of a roster and you have an all-world guard who is essentially by extension your left tackle, you're going to have, or you know, what, you know, whatever side he's playing on, he's essentially your tackle, you're going to have to reset the market for him in a way that impacts guard play for the foreseeable future and offensive line salaries in general. So I think that was something that was very interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, you can scheme around bad guard play, but they scheme for Quentin Nelson here. They really can't replace him if he's gone, so they don't really have a choice. I guess the plus for them is they're probably not going to be paying a quarterback top dollar anytime soon anyway. It's either going to be Matt Ryan, they might bring in a rookie next year, and we'll see where it goes, but they can afford to do it, and you're absolutely right. That's going to be... It's going to be... I mean, when was the last time there was sort of that financial interior lineman surge, like the Steve Hutchinson contract, where people started going out and paying these guards? It just hasn't happened.
Hasn't, but wouldn't it make sense for that to start happening? I mean, we have Aaron Donald, we have Chris Jones, we are in sort of a golden age of interior pass rush, and even... You know, Todd Bowles' favorite blitz is that double A-gap blitz, right, with both of your linebackers, and you're testing a group of people who aren't really used to handling rushes. So, I mean, every position is becoming more valuable the smarter and better that coaches are. They're always going to find a way to attack your weak spots, but if, you know, and the Colts aren't, but if you are an NFC team, if you're an NFC West team, in particular, right, I would have two $15 million a year guards. I just would. I would need them.
So let's talk about expectations with this team, Connor, because I think you and I might be on not the same wavelength here. I look at this team. I see a team last year that was better than their record. They dealt not only with shaky quarterback play, but it was a quarterback who was, you know, he missed the preseason. They got off to a slow start. They lost a couple of really weird games. Everyone loses weird games, so I don't want to overstate it, but their fundamentals, when I look at the spreadsheet, their fundamentals were all solid. This was like an 11-12 caliber win team. I think when you add competent quarterback play to the mix, even if they do slide back a little bit defensively, I think they're easily the best team in the AFC South. And I think they are absolutely... It's going to be tricky when you get to the postseason, and you might have to go to Kansas City or Buffalo or you know, Baltimore or Cincinnati. But yeah, I think top to bottom, this team is as good as anyone in the AFC.
I don't think they're as good as anyone in the AFC. I think they're quite possibly the best team in the AFC South. And I think, like the Titans last year, they can accumulate a lot of regular season wins that will not ultimately translate to deep postseason success. That would be my take.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Okay. That is fair. I will accept that.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
All right, let's go on to team number 10. We are in the top 10, and that is the defending AFC champion, Cincinnati Bengals. Connor, what's the deal with the Bengals? You just did a Joe Burrow cover story. You should know the total deal with the Bengals.
They're the orange and black team, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Good. So the Bengals going this miracle run last year, the more that I think about it, it was perfect timing. And I think you and I have talked a little bit about this, but you have a quarterback who's uniquely predisposed to handling basically the too high shell, right? He can just demolish people within that 15 yard range. He's hyper accurate and has really good receivers. And then you have another team that, like Gus Bradley in Las Vegas, just adopted this very early on four pass rusher scenario where you're flooding the zone with cornerbacks who you don't even care if they get interceptions, you just care that they get to the ball. And, you know, that's how you turn someone like Eli Apple into a serviceable borderline star player, or Chidobe Awuzie, or, you know, these guys who are just fast. They're able to get to the ball, and that's all you really care about. So I think they hit a ton of these NFL flashpoints at the right time, and then they went on a run. They got hot. They had an inspirational quarterback. They had, you know, just all the cool little elements, right, of a borderline Super Bowl champion roster. And then this offseason, you completely revamped the offensive line. You bring in a handful of new starters, which is huge after Joe Burrow was the most sacked quarterback in NFL history, I believe. Or not history, but the most sacked quarterback in the NFL last year. It wasn't mm-hmm. nearly as – I looked up the – boy, David Carr had some rough years in Houston.
He did some really bad times.
So you look that up, and, you know, that's how that goes. But you replace C.J. Uzomah with Hayden Hurst. I think you sort of level off there, even if Uzomah was sort of one of those big locker room guys. But – yeah, I mean, you're running it back with essentially the same group. You would hope, right? The onus is on Zach Taylor at this point, and Joe Burrow to some extent, to evolve, right? I mean, they're going to have to, like Sean McVay, put on the afterburners here, and they're going to have to come up with an offense. And Joe Burrow has talked about this a little bit in the offseason, right? You know, we need something that's going to be a little bit more fluid. We need things that are going to, you know, maybe it is tying the run to the pass a little bit better. I don't know what it is, but and maybe it's going to the quick game a little bit sooner, even though his snap to the throw time is actually pretty good last year. But they're going to have to – they can't arrive this year just based off where they ended last year. And it'll be worth watching because this the Bengals played the longest season in NFL history last year. Your quarterback is just coming back from an appendectomy and will not play in the preseason. And it's not like injuries keep this guy down. But how much can you install? How much different can you look day one, week one of 2022 when everybody knows what's coming now?
Yeah, it's really going to be fascinating to me because I talked about this a little bit with Jared Goff, where it's kind of like, okay, was this a guy who became too reliant on that McVay offense, basically that highly schemed offense that created things for him, and now maybe his mind just sort of gets shaken loose a little bit and open up a little bit by playing in a kind of more spread concepts this year. Joe Burrow has succeeded in what is essentially, I mean, that's like a, what they did last year was like a Tom Brady type offense. It was like, you know, that's what you usually get out of like a 35-year-old veteran,
right,
and what you ask of him. So it's almost like, and you're absolutely right, they need to evolve, they need to show something different this year, but it's almost like, okay, well, if that works, that kind of always works. That's kind of always available to you. And it's just a question of, okay, well, we don't want him taking this many hits. That would be nice to reduce that a little bit. But it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be neat to see how this evolved because I don't know if it's quite as urgent as it needs to. Like, the urgency to evolve is not quite what it should be, if that makes sense, which it might not, but I said it anyway.
You can win with this receiving group because they're just going to win individual matchups. And that was what their entire Super Bowl run was based on. And really their Super Bowl game plan against the Rams was winning these one-on-one matchups. And they did. I mean, that was a game that if you played that game exactly the way that it went a handful of times, I think the Bengals win that game like three times out of five. I really do. I mean, if you got those same wins out of your wide receivers that they got in that Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, you looked at Joe Burrow in the Joe Brady offense. You look at him now in the Zach Taylor offense. The common thread here is he's incredibly accurate. He's great at making anticipatory throws. And what I've found this offseason that I think is really important is someone was explaining this to me. He is so hyper-athletic for the position, but in such a functional way that He can move in the pocket in any way, but still maintain a perfect throwing platform. And that's so huge for playing in the division that you're playing against, playing the teams. He can extend plays like Ben Roethlisberger used to, but it doesn't require that heft. It doesn't require that sort of like hulky and throwing guys off your back thing. He's just really good at moving in the pocket, extending plays. At some point, these guys are going to get open, and when they are, his feet are already in the perfect position to fire the ball.
So, Connor, who moves you emotionally on this team?
Gary, I'll tell you who moves me emotionally is Daxton Hill, the rookie out of Michigan.
Nice.
What are you going to how are you going to work in? Because you have Von Bell, great player, veteran player. You have Jesse Bates, who's awful angry about not getting a contract done after being the best safety in football in 2020, and deservedly so. And then you have a first-round caliber safety. I stood up and did the opera applause for the Ravens for loading up on safety talent during a depressed cornerback market, and I think that's just a really smart thing to do. I think the Bengals did the same thing. Are you going to do sort of a Cardinals, Chiefs, Steve Spagnuolo, Giants kind of thing with this group? I mean, regardless, you make yourself pretty versatile, especially when you're going to play the Ravens, who are going to throw three really good tight ends at you. I just love this move, and I think it's going to make them super versatile on defense.
I'm going to stay in the secondary here, and I'm going to highlight Mike Hilton, who was, he was always a favorite of mine. He was the king of the slot blitz when he was in Pittsburgh, and when the Bengals got him, they gave him a pretty significant free agent contract for last season. It was like, okay, well, we're going to see lots of slot blitzes from Mike Hilton, and they didn't. I'm looking at the numbers here. 29 blitzes last year, which was by far the fewest of his career, even though he played the most snaps at 800. 3.6% of snaps he came on a blitz. In Pittsburgh, it had been 12%, a little under 8%, 7.75%, 10%. And then he was down to 3.6% last year. So they use him in a bit of a different way. He obviously, one of their big moments of the season was when he deflected that pass that led to an interception in the playoff win in Tennessee. He's still valuable in that area, but he's just become a pretty good coverage guy. And obviously, they throw a lot of different looks. It's a group that's come together nicely, and he's a nice piece for them, a nice veteran piece who has become something more than a one-ish trick pony, which is what he was in Pittsburgh.
The slot blitz is the greatest defensive play in the history of NCAA. Football 2004 for Sony PlayStation. Because there was something in the AI with the offensive line that just, you know, they're not going to account for something, but I would do it into, you know, sometimes you just run it on your own. You just wouldn't fix your coverage and you just bring the cornerback anyway. And there was something in the offensive line that just wouldn't understand what was going on. And so you just come off the edge and you almost just immediately you take like three steps and then you just hit the dive button and then you just hit the quarterback enough and then he just falls over. And I mean, I don't know why that was enjoyable back when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, where you just do it over and over and over again. And then the team would have like minus 330 total yards of offense because you're just running the same play. But so a little bit like Mike Hilton's career, you know.
There you go. And if I could clean up that stat, because it was very Peter King-ish how I did the sort of 12%, 8%, 7.7. In Pittsburgh, 4 years in Pittsburgh, he blitzed on 9.3% of his snaps. Last year was down to 3.6. So, I don't know. That's a lot less. That's like, you know, 60% less than he used to do it.
10% of the time, it works 50% of the time.
Oh, expectations for this team. They're obviously really high, and it's hard to get to the Super Bowl. It's tough to do. You can't really project anyone to get there with any sort of confidence. I think I'd pick them to win the AFC North. You probably like another team better than them, though.
I like the next team on our list to win the AFC North, but I like the Bengals to finish in second and to crawl in on the wild card, and I think just be a really good team for a really long time. Here's the way that I think of Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow, we've all talked about, oh, the next this, the next that. Joe Burrow's the next closest thing we have to a Peyton Manning, where every year their team is going to have a winning record just because Joe Burrow is their quarterback. And people are going to want to play for him because he's going to get them the ball, and the team is just going to be good for a very long time. I mean, I think he's very self-deprecating, self-effacing. I think he said today, it doesn't matter about talking about my contract because what if I suck this year? But he knows how good he is. He knows how good.
Yeah.
The Bengals obviously know how good he could be. I think this is the next closest thing we've seen to that team where just for 10 years, you've basically locked yourself into at minimum a wild card spot.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all. But I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of it.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Well, let's go on to team number 9, and this is the highest team among the AFC North participants in our countdown. That is the Baltimore Ravens coming in at 9th. Connor, what is the deal with the Ravens?
The Ravens still haven't signed their quarterback, Lamar Jackson, to a long-term contract extension. He set a hard deadline for week one, so that's sort of the developing storyline that I think everybody's looking out for. I don't think the Ravens are going to pay him a lot of money. I think they're going to do the franchise tag, and then they're going to see how far they can kick this can down the road personally. But will he play under those circumstances? Will he be okay under those circumstances? I don't know. But the Ravens, they changed defensive coordinators this offseason, doing a little bit of shuffling there. They brought in the highest paid safety on the free agent market. They drafted Kyle Hamilton, which we both thought was totally awesome. And they're doubling, they're tripling, they're quadrupling down on what they do really well. They're drafting a buttload of really good tight ends, and they're going to tell people that we're going to beat you 10 yards at a time, or Lamar Jackson's going to blow by you. And I think everybody's going to be healthy this year. They're not going to have like that comical string of injuries like they did last year.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a really, really good football team.
It was, boy, the bad luck they had in the preseason was immediately followed
undefeated
by, I think,
preseason.
A lot of undefeated preseason, we should point out, was followed up by a lot of, I think, good luck in the first half of the year. I think they were very fortunate to have the record they did at the midway point of the season. And then it was like it completely flipped. And it was a team that just couldn't catch a break down the stretch, not to mention Lamar Jackson was out. But they had winnable games that slipped away from them that they probably should have won, and they didn't. And that's it was just a really bizarre year. The defensive coordinator switch is, to me, what kind of defines what they're going to be this year. Mike McDonald, obviously, in. Wink Martindale out at this point. And more, I don't want to necessarily say more than the Lamar Jackson injury, because that was the biggest thing that affected them down the stretch. But the coverage bust they had last year, completely uncharacteristic coverage bust with a sort of scotch tape together secondary that just had so many injury issues. That's what got this team in the end. And you figure they probably get that cleaned up. And therefore, it is, you know, it's looking very much like a two-team race atop the AFC North. And you figure the Ravens are going to be right there, barring, again, just another absurd string of injuries.
Which could happen. I mean, we've seen teams get demolished 2 years in a row, but I just love the veteran talent on this team. I mean, you know, you have Justin Houston, you have Calais Campbell, and, well, we've certainly been bitten by those kind of, I don't know, you're sort of high on the older talent, and that comes back to bite you, obviously. I mean, you have to give guys rest. Guys are going to get fatigued a little bit. This feels like a roster that is bordering on scary complete. You know, it's really good. And in the places that they aren't scary complete, they sort of have little ways to make up for that, to cheat for that. And I think this is the year of Lamar's deep playoff run. I really do. I just think that they're that good of a team. And if you emerge from that AFC, boy, I mean, I don't know. It's not going to be the easiest conference, the easiest conference to walk through, but I think their schedule is a little bit complimentary outside of their division. I don't know. I think this is a pretty good team. You're going to maybe play the Steelers once with Kenny Pickett. You're going to be able to demolish a rookie quarterback. A lot of stuff setting up for the Ravens, I think, really nicely.
Okay. Well, who moves you? Who moves you emotionally here?
All the tight ends, baby. Just give me all the tight ends. This, we had talked about, so we did the tight end preview, the pass catching preview show. And I remember that you and I kind of made fun of Isaiah Likely. Do you remember that? Do you remember all the horrible things you said about Isaiah Likely?
I just said he's like a shuffle runner. He's not like an explosive runner. He kind of just shuffles.
Oh, so much worse than that. There are so many curses in it and stuff. All the terrible things you said about Isaiah Likely.
We said things that can't be taken back.
We said things that can't be taken back. But loved the way that he's looked in the preseason. Granted, you know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, practice clips where you're not really sure the full context and you don't know who he's running against, but he looks almost nothing like he did at Coastal Carolina. Like, all of a sudden has this sort of Antonio Gatesy vibe to him in the preseason, and he's going to be open all the time. You have Mark Andrews. You're not going to have enough coverage linebackers and safeties to take care of all the Ravens' weapons. You're going to have a guy on Lamar. You're going to have one or maybe two players on Mark Andrews, almost like you used to play the Patriots with Rob Gronkowski, where you split it between like a safety and a linebacker. And then if you're in a two or three tight end set, some of these guys are just going to be open. And I think they're all good runners downfield. And Isaiah Likely, I think, is really set to be that breakout candidate, fueled by the incessant criticism he received from Gary Grambling all throughout the preseason.
It's like bulletin board material, except he just blares it on loudspeakers in his apartment or house all day long. We didn't speak about him that poorly. We didn't love him as a prospect.
Speak for yourself. Listen,
that
back
is
to
true.
That show. I was trying to stop you.
Oh, man. He does move. His college tape, he is moving like Antonio Gates, but it's like late career Antonio Gates.
Oh.
He had a lot of long, like, touchdowns, which I'm not quite sure. So maybe he's just moving faster, but just his running stuff. We have said, as I continue to back off my original take, we've said in the past, like, Rob Gronkowski looks ridiculous running. He looks like, you know, an injured satyr or something like that, who's just limping along. But he's obviously moving effectively. It's just, it doesn't look beautiful. And that's kind of how, in a different way, that's kind of how Isaiah Likely
moves. I'm just kind of trying to shame you into where you're like, okay, well, here's why I think Isaiah Likely is going to end up as one of the five greatest tight ends in NFL history.
Oh, man, I will personally carve his bust for Canton.
Yes.
I'll make it look really
good.
Who
moves you, Gary?
There are a couple guys. I'm going to sort of rapid-fire them. I really like Tyus Bowser. I thought someone should have poached Tyus Bowser from this team. I know everyone's sort of simplifying everything on defense, but he does a lot of things really well. He can match up with some tight ends. I like him on the outside. I think Adafe Owe is going to be the potential star there, but I think Bowser can sort of be that kind of Swiss Army knife guy you want on that front seven. I'm curious to see how Patrick Queen develops here with Mike McDonald back. We know he's fast. He hasn't quite put it all together yet. And I can't say enough good things about the Marcus Williams acquisition. We know they got Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton does a million things well, potentially. Marcus Williams, I think, can just make people right on the back end. And I think, especially after the issues they had, again, with just coverage bust last year, I think Marcus Williams can sort of get this together a little bit better. The last guy I want to highlight, sometimes we just don't share our takes. And most of them that we don't share are just, they're really bad takes. But my pre-draft take that I kept to myself was that Jordan Stout was by far the best punter in this draft. And everyone loved Matt Araiza, the punt god, who bombs everything 90 yards. I thought Jordan Stout was, you know, maybe his leg is a notch below, but I think he's so much better directionally. I think he's so much better at putting the ball where he wants to put it. And I think that's what the game is now. Very few offenses are going to get pinned inside their own 20 and have to bomb 80-yard punts. You're going to end up stopping drives around midfield, and then you want that weapon to be able to pin your opponent deep in there, and that's what Jordan Stout does. I thought that was a really good pick by them.
Yeah, and that's what you can do when you have a multitude of fourth-round picks, right? Who cares? Mm-hmm. If you have like 9 fourth-round picks, you're just going to take whoever you want to take for the rest of the draft. And then whoever else is there, who gives a crap, right? And that's why you can take the number one punter on your board or do different stuff like that. Take two of your favorite 3 or 4 tight ends like the Ravens did. Just a really cool, really smart thing. It's so funny that you mentioned Jordan Stout. I was actually digging in on the rookie punter class today. And I actually had a call pertaining to this, and one interesting thing was it's sort of setting off a little bit of an argument in the biz about hang time, collegiate hang time, and how much emphasis are you going to put on collegiate hang time? Because Stout was, while not the punt god, he was the hang time god. But could punt god, in some way, shape, or form, become the hang time god? Because at San Diego State, all he needed to do was be the punt god. But could he be the hang time god, right? You don't know.
That's it. We'll find out. That'll be a debate that rages on, probably just between the two of us for decades here. But I was drawn in by the punt god. I couldn't speak against the punt god during draft season, and I regretted it. And now, all these months later, I'm coming clean that I'm a Jordan Stout guy.
Your courage or lack thereof will go down in podcast history.
It will. Oh my goodness! At my funeral, they'll be talking about the fact that I didn't defend Jordan Stout during draft season. Oh, I'm not looking forward to that. But
my funeral.
What's your best case scenario for the Ravens here? I Super Bowl. I mean, it's got to be
it's
Super 13 Bowl.
13 wins. Yeah. It's the Super Bowl. It's I would devour a Ravens Super Bowl run. Like so many pieces of I don't know what I'm really into these days. Banana cream pie, maybe? Okay. I was at Jets practice yesterday.
that's such a funny thing to eat.
I was gonna say like chocolate cake or something. I don't know, but I'm back off. Well, I'm trying to back off the sweets again. I let sugar back into my life, and now I'm trying to undo that mistake. But the Jets practice yesterday, training camp, and they just walked out like a full banana cream pie, and it looked incredible. But I just had to walk away.
Wow.
Just had to walk away.
Oh, man. Before we wrap this show up, Connor, I should have done this during the Bengals segment, but I just sort of set it aside because I thought it would be a fun or not fun sort of trivia question to wrap this up with. Do you know what a group of tigers is called?
You know,
it's like a pride of lions, a school of fit, whatever, but a group of tigers.
Isn't it? No, that's... is it like a fleet?
You're close.
Flock?
It's a streak.
A streak.
A streak of tigers.
Do you know what, you know what a pack of ferrets is called?
A pack?
A business.
Oh,
a
yeah?
A business of
That's
ferrets.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think so,
That's
right?
That's really good.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. No one's going to fact check us.
What?
It's late enough in the show.
What?
But my least favorite part of my life in this industry, or perhaps in general, is when we put together a magazine story, because I was your editor on the Joe Burrow story, you have to, for the magazine version, write those little photo captions, and all of them get, like, snappy headlines. And our colleague, Mark Bechtel, kind of jokes that he, like, has a streak of, like, 1,000 consecutive issues in which he's worked triple threat into one of those snappy headlines. But I used... There's a picture of Joe Burrow leading a Bengals huddle, and I used winning streak, and then the caption was like, you know, the Bengals won 6 of the last 7 games, and I got multiple notes saying, like, that's not a winning streak, 6 out of 7 games. And I was like, no, it's a winning streak. That's it. That's
a streak of
that's
tigers.
My life. Streak of tigers.
Who comes up with this dumb shit, by the way? Like, who gets to decide... What kind of asshole gets to decide, like, what a group of animals is called?
Someone long ago just sort of called it and just sort of started assigning them, and then they just stuck.
It's a business of ferrets. It's a pride of lions. It's a murder of crows. Was this, like, Grantland Rice that was sitting there, like half in the bag, just being like, oh, yes, look at this murder of crows making its way across. I don't know how Grantland Rice sounds, but... that's a bit for another day, but how secretly frustrating that is.
That you weren't that guy.
That I wasn't that guy.
I wanted to name the animal
groups. I would say that we need to get a mammalogist on, but Gary, we know a good one, so maybe that's a discussion for another time.
The MMQB NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way.
It's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.